Don't try to use those big words on us, please.
No, what's the name of that album?
That album's called Angst in My Pants.
Would you like to, for the benefit of the uninitiated, what does the dictionary give as the definition of angst?
Well, it's a German word which means fear, but in English when it's used it means more anxieties or problems, stress, and in this case in the pants region.
You got it. All right. Russell and Ron, how long has this been going on?
Much too long.
I knew I couldn't get... Would you introduce me to your associates, please?
On guitar with Bob Haig.
Thank you.
One of the synthesizers. In the back, Jim Goodwin.
Thank you, Jim. On drums.
On drums, David Kendrick.
And on bass.
On bass, Les Boheem.
And then we have Ron and Russell. Who is the older?
You
Isn't
are.
Heidi ho, Russifarians and devout adherents to the Church of Ron. Welcome once again to yet another thrilling edition of All You Ever Think About Is Sparks, somehow still the only and therefore best podcast solely devoted to covering Sparks' entire musical career in chronological order. I've been sitting on the bulk of this episode for quite some time, and I'm happy to finally get it out there. Monty Mallon and I had a blast with this one, and I knew that we would because Angst in My Pants is one of my favorite albums of all time. The last episode, episode 35, we only got to the first two songs on the album because we had so much to say. So on this one, we wrap up side one of Angst in My Pants. That means our exploration of Angst in My Pants is going to cover at least three episodes. Since I last rapped at you guys, in detail at least, I trotted across parts of Europe with my amazing wife for 20 days in late June and July. We lived out of a van in Iceland for several days. We got lost in a beautiful park in Helsinki, and I lost pretty much all my body water on a daily basis in Italy. I was bathing Rome and Naples and Florence in my American salty sweat. Italy is hot in the summer, y'all. It ain't Texas, but it is still no joke. Many of you guys know that already, and now I do too. It was quite the adventure, our little holiday, and I was reminded of an ancient aphorism that I just invented. The best stories come from everything going wrong. You want to know more? I love to tell stories. Drop me a line, why don't you, at podcast@sparks@gmail.com, or we could even talk about Sparks. I'll happily indulge. But yeah, seriously, it was an incredible time, and I now have a mega crush on Iceland. I think I'm in love, you guys. But one question. Where's the Bjork statue? And I only saw one single building, a petrol station, named for Bjork. Go figure. Anyway, Sparks, go play Reykjavik. Meanwhile, back in Sparks land, the Brothers Male spent the last several months on their 2023 world tour, and they recently wrapped up somewhere in Japan. They spent the better part of a day, while in Japan, by the way, riding up and down escalators. Probably some enormous shopping mall in Tokyo, but I'm not really sure. But it turns out all that was filmed for a music video. Free virtual high five, if you can guess the song. Now, the question burning in all your minds right now is this. Did I, Christian Huey, host of this here podcast, all about the band Sparks, lo these last 4 years and counting, did I finally get to see the boys play live? I'm relieved to say the answer is yes. Despite a succession of near misses involving travel snafus, we did, in fact, make it back to Austin, Texas, in time to catch Sparks' show on Thursday, July 13th at the ACL Moody Theater. Not the only venue in Austin with the name Moody in the title, by the way, not by a long shot, but the only one with both Moody and ACL in the title. We've had to learn this the hard way in the recent past, driving all across town to get to the real venue called Moody for a Roxy Music show we saw in 2022. Now, if you're familiar with the Austin music scene, you'll likely know that ACL is short for Austin City Limits. Now, like the name Moody, that could refer to a couple of things. One is the taped live music concert TV series that's been airing on public television going back to the 1970s. And the other is the multi-day music and arts festival, also called Austin City Limits, but with the word fest or festival hopefully appended to the end in most cases. What we attended was the former. And if I'm wrong about that, well, not completely surprised, but I wouldn't be disappointed if the Spark show that I witnessed wasn't captured by TV cameras for future on-demand viewing, because it was a spectacle, guys. It was very cool. If I have one regret, it's that I allowed myself to be spoiled ahead of time by seeing the set list for the tour. It would have been really cool to be surprised by Shopping Mall of Love or Music That You Can Dance To or My Baby's Taking Me Home, but hey, who's complaining? The whole band was in top form, and that very much includes Russell's voice, which betrayed no signs of wear at all, even when he hit those tippy-top falsetto notes. Note, by the way, that the same cannot be said of Brian Ferry, whom I saw in 2022 with Roxy Music. I'm sad to say it. Russell's pristine pipes made me appreciate more than ever Ron and Russ's strict, straight-edge lifestyle maintained apparently, astonishingly, throughout their entire lives. Brian Ferry, decades of heavy smoking, voice shot before the age of 60. Russell Mayall, decades of lattes and the very occasional pastry, voice of an angel still at age 74 and counting. Here is a short sampling of some anticipated questions that I figured you might have about the event, especially if you haven't seen a Spark show, and especially if you haven't seen a Spark show on this tour. Here you go. Question number one, did they go along? Two, was there an opening act? No and no. Sparks were scheduled to go on at 8 p.m., and they took the stage at 8:06. No stragglers. They wrapped up by about 9:30 after two fully expected encores. Three, did they do any new interesting arrangements with their songs? Not that I could tell, with the obvious caveat that a six-piece band simply isn't going to be able to recreate something on the scale of Little Beethoven and sound identical to the original recording. Four, did Ron do the Ron Shuffle? Hell yes, better believe he did. Five, why did Russell put on a cowboy hat and address the crowd as y'all in an unconvincing southern drawl near the end of the night? Because every Spark show needs a moment of cringe. Otherwise, the total perfection of the experience would just be too much for us mere mortals to handle. So, there you go. I am proud to say I'm no longer a Sparks concert virgin, although I still have many, many, many more shows to go before I could call myself a Sparks hussy. And now that the tour is over, Ron and Russ are hopefully kicking back in their home or homes in L.A., recuperating from yet another explosive year. What's that? Wait. Hold the phone. Your call is very important to us. Ah, the 2023 tour isn't done with us yet. Sparks recently announced four shows they'll be playing starting late October. That's great news if you're an Aussie, because that's where this mini tour will be confined to. Especially great considering that Ron and Russ have not played a show in Oz since 2001. Here are those upcoming tour dates. Thursday, 26 October at the Palais Theatre, Melbourne. Sunday, 29 October, Harvest Rock, Adelaide. Tuesday, 31 October, Sydney Opera House. Thursday, 2 November, Fortitude Music Hall, Brisbane. Finally, because I failed to mention it last time, Ron recently celebrated 78 orbits around the sun on August 12th. Thanks for the music, Ron. Thanks for the mustaches, too. And congratulations on outliving Heath Ledger by 50 years. So, may we start? Escalator.
way this song works is really weird, because there's not like, is there an actual chorus? Because it just kind of seems like
it just does its thing.
It does its thing, like, man, if you say your prayers, and then it sounds like it's a bridge to something. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba, LA is safe, ain't gonna quake. That's hilarious.
Ain't gonna quake.
I never heard that before either. Somebody's gonna die. And it goes right back down. The verse chorus that you would expect is not really happening here. It's not what you would predict.
It's a list. Every now and then he likes to do lists.
Yeah.
Then he goes into, and somebody's going to die, and I can't reveal who. Cold beer will cure a cold. Cold beer and pretzels takes care of cancer. Moscow will march to France. They'll do the can-can dance. Don't worry, it'll work out. Maxime's will throw them out.
What does that mean?
When I was learning Spanish a few years later, for some reasons, I love to say those lines and try to Maxime's tirara les afuera. Yeah, it's like, it wasn't good, but I was like, how would I say it? For some reason, I got obsessed with
it. Tira, okay, yeah. Maxime's tirara.
Yeah. I got obsessed with trying to figure out the Spanish translation of this song.
I do that a lot too, by the way.
Oh, do you?
Not alone. I do, yeah, because I'm always using Spanish.
Well, when we get to No Such Things for Aliens, we can talk about You Are Not Alone. We'll save that. We'll have to save that phrase till then.
Oh, my God. That's going to be a while.
Will be. So they're going to stop Saturday night, so you better have fun now, I predict. They're going to stop having the sun, so you better get tan now. Tan reference.
Stop. I keep doing this. What
ending is just, and the song will fade out three times, and then it doesn't fade out.
Yes, thank you. I'm glad you got it. I gave you a chance to put that in. Yeah, great joke. It's one of the first jokes that I got listening to that album, and I wonder how many people didn't get it. But I love that.
Which one?
It's not a fade out.
Oh, right. No, it was very clearly not a fade out.
Yeah, not a fade out. So what's the business about the tan?
Paul pointed out correctly, and I've noticed it myself, that they refer to tans a lot. I've never noticed that. I wish I looked a little better. There's the new one he mentioned has a reference to a tan. I don't remember which one it was. I guess it's the brand new one. Oh, yeah, he didn't like it. It was like anti-tan or something like that. He had an interesting point about it. But he pointed out there's a few times they talk about tans. It's kind of a theme.
I didn't notice that, but okay. But now that's all I'm going to be listening for.
Right. Right. Huh, they love tans. They're trying to show they're from LA. They don't seem like guys who hang out on the beach and get tans very much.
Well, they don't seem like LA guys, do they?
Well, they are Sparks guys.
So that song, if there's one song on this album that I think could probably, you know, you could just sort of slip into a playlist with a big beat, that's the one.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's the same kind of play that they're making. They're going for it's the big, dumb rock anthem that is made for a particular audience, you know. Maybe it's the disaffected, frustrated white male or whatever.
Well, you're getting me thinking, because on the next album they definitely put one in there that was like that, praying for a party.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that was absolutely designed with that in mind. And I hadn't thought of this one. This one is just so much. It's so fun. It's so silly.
You're right. You know,
now I'm thinking about it. Maybe that's what they were trying to do. But I know I would play these songs for my friends, and there were two people who gave them the time of day, and the rest of them were like, I don't think so. At their nicest.
It's not. Yeah, it's not in the top 10 or 20. Of Spark songs that I would play to someone who I'm trying to convert.
Mm-hmm.
It's never been one of my favorites, although I've come to really appreciate it for what it is. But it does kind of seem like a purposeful sort of toss off or a piss take.
Oh, I think it's more. I think it's, again, I keep coming back. These are two guys who are just having fun again in the studio. They had a great band with them now, who is really mature, and they came up with fun, crazy songs. On this album, I think they took it a little further, as we've been talking about. Yeah. But I love this song.
Yeah, and you know, when you've got a solid idea, and it's funny, and it works, like, you know, why mess with it?
So, all right, there's six songs on the side. I love every one of them. The couple that I have little problems with are on the B side.
Okay.
All six of these songs are amazing.
They are really amazing.
I've said it. Shall we move forward?
We shall. Okay. The next song, Sex Town USA. What a great title.
May I make a statement?
You may. Go for it.
One of the greatest Spark songs ever. This is what they opened with. It's so perfect to open with. Love this song. And as a drummer, this is so much fun to play.
I'll bet it is.
Yeah. And thus ended my statement.
Oh, man. So, you know, when there's such a propulsion, I think I said this before, but there's a propulsiveness to the rhythm of so many of these songs. And Sex Town USA is just a grand fucking example of that. Not to mention what Ron is doing with his synthesizer there. There's a lot of really fun arpeggios that he's doing that really keeps things moving along. It's, again, I hate to sound like a broken record, but it's fun. It's fun. I mean, it's
these two albums are all about the fun.
Yeah.
The next album, it started to evolve a little bit. They got a little, they wanted to do other things. But this one was building on the last one, and they're all about just getting out there and having some fun. Nothing wrong with that.
I was trying to fold the lyrics of this song into my overarching premise of this album being a cocked eye at conspicuous consumerism in the 80s, and here it's sex as something that you consume. I don't know if that works.
It might. I mean, but even if it's not strictly consumerism, it's definitely a song about culture.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Thanks for saving me there.
Yeah.
I'm getting a little jealous of Paul here because he seems to be able to fold a lot of stuff into the framework that he has. And I can't always do it so successfully. But
But I think right here they're talking about the times. These were the times the internet was a new thing with all the things that it brought. You know, it was a different era.
1982?
Well,
the internet. I mean, outside of like the military and certain, universities.
Maybe it hadn't really hit yet. Maybe it hadn't really hit yet. All right, I take that back. But nonetheless, sex as consumerism is absolutely on target, and it's absolutely what they're talking about in this song, 100%.
All right, I win.
You excellent. Win.
Yeah. Okay, great. I win. That's great. I don't know if I mentioned this before, but as on the last album, when it comes to the way that Ron was composing these songs, or Ron and Russ was composing these songs musically, they tend not to stray too much from, say, if like this song is an A major, and they pretty much just stick to A major. There are no flights of fancy that, you know, he was doing around, you know, the time of Indiscreet and things like that. So it's a fairly easy song to learn and play, which I'm thinking was probably on Ron's mind while he was writing the songs for this album and Womp, because he knew that he had a whole band of people. And while they were, you know, very talented, he didn't want them to have to struggle to learn overly complicated songs with crazy chords and keys and modes.
Well, what I would add to that is what I think I've mentioned this a couple of times. These guys love to play live, and they wanted to play with a band, and these were written for a band to go out and just kill.
Yeah.
And they got a band that was capable of doing it. I think that's what they're just building on that theme. If you look at Angst in My Pants, that could have been done. And it was done later in the decade when they were or in the 90s, when they were just doing the two of them with electronic loops. Easy to do. I Predict, you got the drum beat, and it's band, but it's kind of a quirky little thing, as you were saying. It doesn't go into a traditional band structure. This is written for a band. Sextown USA is written for a band to be playing loud and hard and raucous.
Explain to me how this is meant for a band more so than the previous song.
Just because the instrumentations are coming together in a much more traditional band fashion, that you have the whole bass and guitars just all coming at you. It's really a wall of sound.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is. This is a wall of sound. And a couple of the other songs on here are too.
Eat Your Heart Out, Phil Spector.
Yeah. Phil Spector reference.
Right.
But, and Ramones. I mean, you know, the Ramones and Russell were pals back then. And, you know, they hung out. But you can hear the wall of sound on here. It's just a band playing hard and rock and roll. And that's what they went for on this song. And to me, it's absolutely an irresistible song. It's absolutely irresistible. I would love to see them do it with their current band too.
I would too. Do you know if they've played this live often?
No, I don't think they have. They played it. They opened with it in 82. They probably played it in the 80s a few times, but I don't think it's gone back into their set list.
They really need to play that song and either make it a medley or just have it just go right into All You Ever Think About Is Sex, because they seem like two sides of the same coin. To me.
Yeah. The medley thing does not work for me. I hate when bands do medleys. Hate it. But that's a whole other conversation we can have.
All right. We're going to call off the medleys.
What's that?
We're going to call off the medleys.
Call off the medleys, please.
All right.
Pick one or the other.
Well, which one would you pick?
We won't get into late era Genesis now. We'll save that conversation.
Okay. That's a different podcast. Anyway,
different podcast. Yeah.
Wow.
Love this song. Love everything about it.
Yeah, I do too. There's a carnival kind of atmosphere to the music, to Ron's keyboard playing, his arpeggiations. There's just so much happening all the time, and it sounds so fun and celebratory.
Yeah, and you know what else? It can't be played loud enough.
It can't be played loud enough.
You cannot make it loud enough. No matter how loud you play it, you'll always wish you could get to 11.
I deign you, listeners, to play that at a volume that's too loud. You can't do it. Yeah, I agree. It's a fantastic fucking song. I always jam to it. You know, this album and this song, but this album really hit me in a very, very personal way. I went through a hard time about 15 years ago. I was going through a divorce, but my God, you know, I'd be driving around and I was just getting the Sparks, and I put this record on, I burned it onto a blank CD that I could play in my little Jeep, and it was just the joy got me through so much. And this song included, and a lot of it is just because it sounds so celebratory. And I think that's the case for this whole album. It sounds like a celebration. It's fun.
The songs are just so developed, you know, Mickey Mouse is a beautifully developed song. The Decline and Fall of Me, beautifully developed. And there are really so many parts to it. And Eaten by the Monster of Love, what a great, wonderful way to end it. There was just a level of songwriting here that's always great with the Sparks album. Somehow they took it a step further than their last one.
Most of the songs on here sound like they could be anthems, like they're written to be anthems. There's this very forward anthemic quality to most of these songs, which I think was lacking quite a bit for a while. And it just works so well here. Maybe that's why I like to, you know, listen to it while I drive.
Oh, it's made for listening. You remember 22-year-old Monty listening to this.
Well, that's right. Oh, my goodness.
22 years old.
But that's the perfect scenario. I wish I could have been 22 listening to this.
It was great. It was great.
I'm going to read through the lyrics for Sextown USA. Here we go, everybody. Drop the goody-goody look and put on your shoes, because I'm going to recommend a little something for you. Oh, yeah. Grab your little Lulu or your Sally or Sue and take her out to that metropolis without no taboos. Oh, yeah. What you say, who are you? Never mind, just sing the tune. I'm going to stop right there because I...
Doesn't matter who you are.
That's Ron, isn't it? Doesn't Ron sing that line?
I don't know. I will have to listen to it.
Got to go back and listen, because I swear to you that that line is sung by Ron.
You mean the Never Mind, Just Sing the Tune?
Never mind, just sing the tune. It does not. It's not coming from Russ.
I will listen to it.
Go back and listen to it. I swear. I really do think that it's Ron. And I think that maybe, you know, outside of the Ingmar Bergman thing, that maybe... the most he was given to sing on a Sparks song.
Shopping Mall of Love.
Oh, shit. Shopping Mall. Shopping Mall of Love. Well, that'd be a fun one to get to. What do you say? Who are you? Never mind. Just sing the tune. Sextown USA. We can go anywhere and it becomes Sextown USA. We can go here or there. It all becomes the perfect place. And what a pace. Man, I've heard of Peyton Place and Pigalle too. Is that how you pronounce it? Asterisk.
I never bothered to look up Pigalle.
Well, I did.
Okay.
Yes. So, asterisk there. Not sure. Do you know how to pronounce that?
He says Pigalle.
Well, Pigalle. There you go. Okay. So, Peyton Place was the first thing that he mentioned. Peyton Place was a novel by Grace Metallieur that was made into a very popular television soap opera from 1964 to 1968 about the lives of a group of people in a small town in New England. People sometimes say that a situation is like Peyton Place when they mean that a group of people have many secrets and complicated emotional relationships.
That captures it.
Sure. Yeah, that's cool. That's out there. And How do you say it? Pigalle?
He says Pigalle, I never bothered to. I just figured it was so, more of the...
I looked up Pigalle, and Pigalle is a trendy neighborhood in Paris, very popular with tourists. It used to be a red light district with sex shops, cabarets, and prostitutes.
Interesting.
Fits. Here you go. And now I'm going on with the lyrics. But this is better than the others. It's American, too. Oh, yeah. No one has the time to eat a meal or to think because they're way too busy doing Kama Sutra-y things. That's such a great couplet.
Yes, it is.
Every now and then, I just have to stop and be like, that's a great couplet. That's great.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah. Look around, see the sights, go to bed, what a life. And then the chorus, Sextown USA, da-da-da. There's a whole lot of fish in the sea. And there's sort of a breakdown there. Da, 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 da. And then I really love the way the song getting just kicks really, right back.
Yeah. As I said, getting really in the weeds. Live, they did the There's a Whole Lot of Fish in the Sea twice.
Really?
I don't know why.
Okay. That's great. And I love the way that the machine kicks back into motion after that. In the sea. If you try to come here and you try to abstain, they'll send you to the prison for the criminally insane. Oh, yeah. Maybe I'll just stay here for the rest of my life because it's better than commuting here with you every night. Oh, yeah. And the chorus. And there it is. Ends with a great joke. Fantastic song. Once again, Ron writing about sex in a way that somehow is not sexy, but really compelling.
Yep.
All right. Listeners, here it is. Sextown, USA.
Look and put on your shoes, because I'm gonna recommend a little something for you. Oh yeah. Grab your little Lulu or your Sally or Sue, and take her out to dance and jump a loose without no taboos. Oh yeah. What you say? Who are you? Never mind, just sing the tune. Sextown, USA, we can go anywhere and it becomes Sextown, USA. And what a face. May the Buddha fade in places, we got it too. But this is better than the others, it's American too. Oh yeah. No one has the time to eat a meal or to think, because they're way too busy doing Kama Sutra things. Oh yeah. Hey, look around, see the sights. Go to bed, what a life. Sextown, USA, we can go anywhere and it becomes Sextown, USA, we can go here or there. It all becomes the perfect place. And what a place. There's a whole lot of fish in the sea. Sextown, USA, we can go here or there and it becomes Sextown, USA. We can go anywhere and it becomes Sextown, USA. We can go here or there, it all becomes the perfect place. And what a pace. If you try to come here and you try to abstain, they'll send you to the prison for the criminally insane. Oh yeah. Maybe I'll just stay here for the rest of my life, because it's better than commuting here with you every night. Oh yeah. Sextown, USA, we can go anywhere and it becomes Sextown, USA. We can go here or there, it all becomes Sextown, USA. We can go anywhere and it becomes Sextown, USA. We can go here or there, it all becomes the perfect place.
And we're back. Okay. Next song we have is Sherlock Holmes. So we're making a tempo change. We're making sort of a mood change. Do you have any thoughts about Sherlock Holmes?
Always liked it from the very first. It's endured. It's one that they played on the Two Hands, One Mouth tour. It's one that they played in subsequent tours, including the Hippopotamus tour. I think they really like it. I think that they like it. It's a change of pace. It slows mm-hmm. things down a little bit, and they don't slow mm-hmm. things down too often. And I think it's a nice, it's a great little song. And here's one that is a little on the sadder side too.
Yeah.
He's desperate
yeah.
at the end.
He's desperate. I mean, once again, it's that familiar Ron character where he just wishes he was more blank. And in this case, he wishes he was more like Sherlock Holmes, because we all know that the all-time greatest pussy slayer of all time was Sherlock Holmes. I did say that this was not kid friendly.
We're getting a little ribald tonight.
We're getting ribald, aren't we? yeah, Ron being Ron. That's a unique idea. You know, thinking if only I were more like Sherlock Holmes, I'd be getting all the ladies.
But it does raise an interesting question: is of all the potential icons he could have held up, why did he choose that one?
Yeah.
Because he's not known as a great ladies' man or anything. I mean, not that he isn't, but, you know, James Bond, there's so many others that you could have held up there, but he chose Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I get it in a way. I mean, who wouldn't want to have, you know, those sort of superhuman powers of deduction and insight and all that stuff? But the fact that he links that to, you know, being popular with the ladies and, you know, and that would make him look like a more attractive lover is a very peculiarly Ron thing. And, you know, it's funny. Sherlock Holmes never really grabbed me as a song. It sort of sounded like what it, like, you know, what you hear during an intermission where you go and get this. That sounds really cruel to go get your drinks and snacks and like come back, just because it's so much slower than what's come before, and there isn't like a whole lot of like a melody or anything that really keeps me glued. I hate to say it, probably my least favorite song. I get why it's cool, but my least favorite song on the album.
But you know, that's so interesting that you would raise that, because during the Two Hands, One Mouth tour, when I don't know why I keep referring to it so much tonight, but it was just Ron and Russell, as you know. And I remember a lot of the internet chatter was that the version with just the two of them was better. A lot of I liked them both, but a lot of people felt that it was better than the one on the record, because Russell was so expressive on it, and he was, and just having the simple background of the piano carried over the song and gave it kind of a little bit of a different nuance. So it might be interesting to see what happens if you listen to it from that perspective.
I could imagine this song with a more intimate and sort of pared down production. I could see that. Yeah. Is that in is that on the Two Hands One Mouth album?
On the live album? I believe so, but it's all over YouTube. There's tons of them.
Okay, I'll take that up.
I believe it's on that. Yeah. It really has this question that we're discussing: why Sherlock Holmes? And when he goes through the lists of qualities, do you want to have fun? Do you want a good time and all that? Do you want me to laugh? And then he ends, should I be more like him? Those dancing isn't really a Sherlock Holmes.
That has nothing to do with Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, but then at the end he says, should I be more like him? So what's going on there?
Yeah. That's a great question. Would you like to read the lyrics? Do you have them?
Yeah. Fog matters to you and me, but it can't touch Sherlock Holmes. Dogs bark and he knows their breed. And I knows where they went last night, knows their masters too. Oh, baby, hold me tight. Just pretend I'm Sherlock Holmes. Just pretend I'm Sherlock Holmes.
Like you
just
do. Pretend.
Now I can't listen to this song anymore. Now it's like, what? Why Sherlock Holmes? We need to really explore this.
Yeah.
Stay, don't give me that same old act. I can call in Sherlock Holmes. He'll want your biography and pictures of you in lace and satin looking great. Oh, baby, hold me tight. Spend the night with Sherlock Holmes. Hold me tight like Sherlock Holmes. Just pretend I'm Sherlock Holmes. Do you want to have fun? Do you want a good time? Do you want me to laugh? Do you want me to cry? Do you want me to dance? Do you want me to sing? Do you want me to joke? Should I be more like him? Oh yeah, I can dance like Sherlock Holmes. I can sing like Sherlock Holmes, but I can't be Sherlock Holmes. Oh yeah, I can dance like Sherlock Holmes. I can sing like Sherlock Holmes, but I can't be Sherlock Holmes. We need Paul.
I think you're right.
We need Paul. Yeah, we need the British perspective here. There's something we're not getting.
Yeah, maybe so. because I could so easily see Ron just handing over, you know, a sheet of paper with the lyrics and the chords on there, you know, to the other members of the band, be like, this is what we're doing. We're doing this. What does this mean? I don't know. I can dance like Sherlock Holmes. I don't know. It just came to me.
Yeah. Now I have, now I'm going to have to figure this one out.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm with you. Yeah, definitely. One of the very few, I think this is probably the only, really the only time on the album, the only song on the album other than the title track where things really are more downbeat rhythmically than the rest of the album.
Well, this is an upbeat album.
And then after that, oh, sorry, actually, why don't we hear the song? Sherlock Holmes, let's hear it.
Does have the quality of being a great song, in my humble opinion, at least.
It is a great song. It took me a while to get into it, to glom onto it, yeah. But I definitely like it now. The next song is Nicotina.
Back in the anthem mode.
Yeah, it's an anthem, but like a really weird minor key, almost Wagnerian Sturm und Drang, just boom, boom, all this drama about nicotina.
That's what makes it so great. It's like, I guess, remember our conversation about Where's My Girl? All this and then it's like, found her. Yeah, and here it is, all this drama again about a cigarette.
So for the longest time,
maybe there's an element of delusion throughout this whole album. You know?
In what way?
Maybe Sherlock Holmes is delusion. Maybe the idea of a cigarette maybe they were doing some experiments at that time. Who knows? Nicotina. I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So nicotina, like when I first heard the song, just sort of casually, and then for a while after that, I assumed that it was about quitting smoking. You know, and if you've ever, have you been a smoker? I don't mean to pry.
I smoked one cigarette once in about 10th grade.
I've been an on-off smoker pretty much my whole adult life. Now, you know, luckily I never got as hooked onto nicotine as a lot of other people do. But I can completely sympathize with trying to quit the habit of smoking and nicotine as being an epic battle between you and whatever forces that are pulling you down, which is why when I first heard the song, I'm like, oh, I like this. I like this. I get this. This sounds like someone who's trying to quit smoking and realizes, you know, the enemy that he is up against. But it doesn't really read that way, though, does it?
It doesn't. It reads as a pretty funny song.
It's like from the point of view of a cigarette, right?
Almost, yeah. And then there's that verse, a man with a cough stepped to the machine. That's such a classic Ron
image. A man with a cough stepped to the machine. I like that line.
It's a great line.
It really is.
By the way, 22-year-old Monty to this day has a very, very close friend named Tina. So you can imagine how crap she got.
Okay, so I see. So at that time when you knew Tina, you knew nicotina.
And I know her now.
But is that right? Does she like the song?
She's always liked the song.
Okay, well there you go. Then you've done well. Nicotina.
She was one of the three who had tolerance. Maybe four. All right. Anyway, the song is just a wonderful you know what it is? It's imaginative. It's imaginative. Yeah. It gives life to the cigarette, you know. And
is that what it is? I mean, the cigarette, this nicotina, Tina, whatever. I mean, this he's breathing life into the. That's who's telling the story, right? Is the is this one cigarette called nicotina?
Let me give you another different idea there. Maybe the ones who's telling the story are the other cigarettes in the pack.
Oh, that's interesting.
We're watching all of this unfold. And at the end, they say, nicotine is gone. Nicotine is gone. So maybe they're the ones who are telling the story.
This is one of those situations where I just would love to just be able to, hey, Ron, what's up? What were you thinking here? Clearly, you know, I mean, Ron and Russ, come on, they were never smokers.
No.
What would drive them to write a song about a cigarette? I'm sure it's interesting. but I love I love the minor key drama, the heaviness of it. It just works so very well. I'm going to read those lyrics.
Go for it.
Not every cigarette is a dead thing. Some have a mind and try to be other things. Pushed in the pack, they crave some Virginia air. I like that. That's cute. Softly, they pray to someone, but life ain't fair. They're born to lose. They're born to fill the lungs of Jack, the lungs of Jill. And like I said, life just isn't fair.
Boom, 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 boom,
thank you. Boom, 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 boom. Once in a while, a cigarette has a name. Nicotina, that's her name. She had a tiny voice and she sang all day. She was a cigarette, but she loved to play. Nicotina, Nicotina. Nicotina is her name. A man with a cough stepped to the machine, dropped coins in the slot, the end of a dream. He ripped the pack and coughed and then coughed again, popped out a cigarette, and we're near the end. She screamed and screamed, but so much was filtered out. Now Nicotina's only a tiny cloud. Nicotina's gone, but life goes on. Though Nicotina's gone, but life goes on. Though Nicotina's gone, but life goes on and on and on and on. Nicotina, Nicotina, what's her name?
I'm starting to see that old guy who always plays the cowboy. He's always in the movies, and he's always telling, you know, like, stories. What's that?
Sam Elliott?
Yeah, maybe that's who it is. Yeah. He was in a couple of the Coen Brothers movies.
Sam Elliott. Yeah.
Sam Elliott. Maybe this is his mm-hmm. story. Maybe he's the one telling the story.
I could see that.
Maybe someone in the band said, "I need a Nicotina," or somebody, Ron, heard that from somebody making a joke and just turned it into this,
yeah,
this whole opera.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, you know, with Ron, you know, and Russell, you know, by extension, I could totally imagine, you know, them thinking, okay, we've got 3 days, 4 days, or whatever that we have left in this studio. And Ron's like, "Oh, hey, I've got a great idea." It's a living, talking cigarette, and she's a girl, and you know, these are her dying moments. Sure, whatever, go for
it. I bet this came to him in 5 minutes. I bet he heard the Nicotina phrase and just said,
"Go for it.
I've got it. I've got it." And it just came to him.
And there it is. What's her name? Okay. Let's play it.
Not every cigarette is a dead
Okay.
Now there, this is a case where you heard Mac knowing what to do with David Kendrick.
Explain.
So, yeah, the beginning.
Oh.
And his drumming is very particular on this. He plays on the first couple notes, the one E, and just at the very beginning of the measures, and he pushes it and pushes the measure.
This
and
that, is Nicotina. That, we're going back to Nicotina.
Yeah. And that's working with Mac and knowing how to use those drums. It's an opera. That's what this is. This is an opera. And then at the end, boom, boom, boom. You know, brilliant, brilliant musicianship on this thing.
Yeah, totally agree. I would love to know exactly what musically Mac was doing in there. I came across this quote, and I don't know which of my sources it was from. Here it is. But Russell told Uncut Magazine in October of 2017. This is his quote about this album. And I think it's about, hold on. It's about the album. He didn't even, the song, I'm not even sure. He said, Mac took a snippet of the drum track from a Queen song and we looped that. I don't know if they know it, but they're on one of our songs. So I'm not crazy. There is some sort of a Mac Queen connection going on here with these couple of albums.
You have been very consistent on that point.
And would love to know what it was, which song it was. All right. So what do we have left? We've got side one.
Mickey Mouse.
We have Mickey Mouse.
So can you imagine if you just had those five songs as one side, and then somehow you also have this song, which is right up there. Again, it's another top 10, top 20 Spark song.
Yeah.
And I have a friend, I'm going to give him a shout out. His name is Marty. And he is the one who says, this is all about religion. So this gets to some of the things that you were talking about before. I don't know if he's right or not, but I hear it. And he said that basically it's Disney as a religion. And that's how he heard the song. And I think there's some validity to it. But even if you just look at it, even taking that element out of it, it is about Disney and its influence, and it is about marching to the same tune and being part of that Disney ethos and mentality. And there, it's one of these just absolutely flawless numbers.
Yeah, I'd be really, I would love to talk to that guy. And on the religion angle, I sort of get it. I don't really see how that's fleshed out to that degree in this song.
He may not agree with you now because he's become very religious.
Oh, well, there you go. He's primed.
Back then he was thinking, okay, this was kind of like an anti-religion song. This is what religion does to you. It has, you know, so it'd be very interesting to talk to him. That's a great point. We should do that sometime.
Mickey Mouse as the Messiah is
his mind has changed on this, given the years that have gone by and what has transpired.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I do love the idea of Mickey Mouse as some sort of a messianic figure. It kind of fits in with a lot of the other stuff that I've been kind of talking about here. The notes that I wrote about this song, consumerism, again, this time with a grinning corporate mascot. There's a moment, of course, where Russell sings, I'm here for you in the voice of Mickey Mouse. What does that mean? You know, I'm here for you.
Like Russell, me.
There, you know, and so what is that? I mean, no, I can see the sort of a religiosity, but there's something that's a little off-putting about it, maybe even menacing.
Feel the need, come back.
Come back. There's comfort. Comfort, familiarity. Here it is. You don't have to. And again, I'm coming back to that sort of 80s, early 80s Reagan Thatcherite sort of consumerism that was preached around that time. And, you know, Mickey Mouse and Disney just seems like such an apt symbol for that at that time. I'm here for you. Is this Mickey's charm offensive, you know? as, you know, Disney endeavors to devour more and more. And
I don't know.
Insinuate itself into the center of our cultural awareness even more. And
I think it's more about that. I don't know if it's about Mickey per se. I think it's more about, you know, this idea of some kind of messianic figure, this icon.
The more I think about
it. This is another one of those songs, just like some of the others we were talking about, where you can bop your hands to it and dance and have so much fun with it. And then you think, okay, there's more here. There's a lot more here. It doesn't, you know, you have to really hear it, but there's a lot going on in this song.
Well, I think your friend may have a little something there. I'd love to talk to him more about that. So Mickey Mouse, let's see, I took a couple of other notes here because I was sort of interested in the composition. It's an A major, but as you go through the song, there's a lot of what they call non-functional chords. Like, they don't actually fit in A major. You have a lot of dominant chords of other dominant chords. For example, all the verses go major 2 to major 1, which should usually be a minor 2 to a major 1, and I'm sorry for getting very nerdy here, but it has a very different sound when you hear it. It's brassier, it's bigger, and it's more imposing. And I noticed as you go through the song, even though it's nominally in A major, there's a lot of play around the circle of fifths, which tends to have like sort of like an imposing sort of sound, I found. And that's my contribution.
No, it's really interesting to hear it from that perspective.
I love the sound effects, those laser beam sounds that that Ron is doing on his Roland. Those hand claps are wonderful. All the little things they do with the rhythm and all the instrumentation. They have so much fun with this. And even Bob Hogg, he gets in what may be his only solo on the whole album. It's not much of a solo, but it's exactly the kind of solo that I would expect that they would want to have. Just, you know, just play the notes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Da, da, da. Yeah. No, it's great.
Yeah.
I don't have much to add. It's always been one of my absolute favorites.
Me too, man. I love
it.
And
again, it's another one of these big rock songs, you know?
It is.
They really wanted to do that on this album. I think they were really thinking about live presentation.
Absolutely.
In these years. This is what they were all about in those years. Look how much they tour now.
Yeah.
You can't keep them off the road.
I know. And those guys are pushing 80.
I know. It's crazy.
Would you like to read the lyrics?
I would be most honored to. These are the lyrics to Mickey Mouse. Can you raise both your hands and clap them? Can you say, sure, I'll always try? Can you make friends among people and animals? Basically, everything is easy. Give it a try. You'll see I'm right. Because if a mouse can be special, so can you, Christian.
I saw the point.
So can you. And my name is Mickey Mouse. To my right is Minnie Mouse. I always did this when I play this, when I hear this song.
She's behind you.
I always point to the right. No. And we own a little place in Disneyland, California. Let's have a party and be happy. Can we invite my closest friends? You can ask Donald Duck, Pluto, and all the gang. Well, you should try to smile, dear. Get yourself a pet deer.
Oh, what a great
dog, cat, bird, pig, lamb, horse, cow, fox, wolf, snake, ox, fish, a goldfish, mouse. He always says a goldfish.
Why do I love that breakdown so much? Because all of a sudden, I've got all these thoughts in my head. I'm like, oh, this is about consumerism and Disney bad, and he's trying to be your friend. And suddenly it's about pets. I can't explain to you like why I do, but I love that Ron goes from fish to goldfish.
A fish, a goldfish. I love the, I always love the, right
yeah,
before
a goldfish.
Fish.
Love it.
A goldfish.
Yeah.
So let me finish it up because this is where it ties together and gets ominous. Okay. You can raise both your hands and clap them. You can say, sure, I'll always try because you look hesitant, wary, or am I wrong? You can go off and be a loner. Maybe you can't believe a mouse. But when you feel the need, come back. I'm here for you and you.
Wonderful.
Oh boy.
Can't wait until we get to discuss Minnie Mouse.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a couple of months. There it is. And I guess that's the end of side one, right?
Yeah, if you wanna. Yeah, I think it probably is. That is the end. Yes, that is the end of side
that
one.
Is, definitively, we know this.
Yes.
Okay, there it is. All right. Yes. So there's so much other stuff that I have in my notes about this album, but I really want to make sure that the second episode has, you know, enough that's worthwhile to go back to. So I'm gonna hold off on the appearances of some of the tracks on this album in TV and film. And there were several songs that appeared on TV and film, not only in 1982 and thereabouts, but also many decades later. And was there anything else that I wanted to? Yeah, and also, of course, they did a tour to promote the album not long after its release. And so we'll talk about that a little bit more when we finish up side two.
Yeah, I saw him in Cleveland, and I remember about 5 minutes or so before the show, Russell peeking out from the curtains and take a look at the crowd.
Saying, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Get a sense of the crowd that night.
Oh, man. Okay, so you got to tell me again. Which show are you going to? Philadelphia? Are you going to? You're going to two shows.
Two, Philadelphia, and then two nights later in D.C.
Okay. Oh gosh, that's it. Do you know who their opening acts are?
Oh, they don't have opening acts.
Do they not? That's interesting. Well,
you know what? I could be wrong because a few years ago they did have a couple opening acts. Generally, they have not. I have not seen them with opening acts. But they have. They have had a couple. So I have, we have to find out. I don't know.
They're doing a well-promoted show at the Hollywood Bowl in a couple of months. And their opening act is going to be my second favorite band. They might be Giants.
I know. What I was talking to my wife about that. We've always liked them too. And wow. What a,
by the way,
that is the perfect pairing.
Oh, it is. Oh, absolutely. And for, oh gosh. I mean, just, yeah. I mean, that would dream come true. Sorry, I couldn't make that happen. And as it turns out, they're actually in my town. I think they're performing right now in my town. But I chose to do this.
You chose to do
because
this?
Because this is my art.
And this is so your, this
and
is
also
your
I've seen
your
Giants
muse.
Like eight times. You are my muse. Yeah. And Ron Russ and all the others.
Yeah, they have something to do with it too, I guess.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. I suppose. Great.
All right, sir.
Yeah, I guess we can leave it there. I mean, there's so much more to get to, but we need to leave things for next time. So looking forward to that. We are going to be meeting again in a few days so we can listen to, for the first time, at least for myself, the brand new Sparks album, The Girl Is Crying in Her Latte.
Yep, and I think it'll be only my second or third time hearing it too.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I have to ask you. So, have you already purchased the album? And or like, how is it? What is the delivery mechanism to your ears?
I have purchased the album, so it will be delivered. But I will also download it from Spotify the second it is available. But I do buy the album. I'll probably buy the CD as well. So
excellent.
I don't have the patience.
Yeah,
I want to hear it. I've been waiting so long.
I don't blame you. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, it'll be.
But I do support them. I do buy the albums, and I did get the second album, Wolfram Tweeter's Clothing, on Record Store Day.
Oh, so, just this last one?
Yeah. Yeah. I found one store somewhere that had it, and I can't remember the name, but I should find it out and give them a shout out because they did such a great job with the packaging.
It's a fair world. Harley Feinstein, you just got a dollar for that purchase.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
I love that.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
We will talk soon. Great show. Thank you.
Hell yeah, man. All right. Talk to you soon. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night.